Good morning. It is Sunday, June 2nd, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. The Fayetteville Underground will feature Women Take Flight during the month of June. This national juried art exhibition is in recognition of the 2013 Air Race Classic, which ends in Fayetteville on June 21st. The opening reception begins at 5 p.m. during First Thursday. More information is available at FayettevilleUnderground.com.
Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks, theater options for the month of June, and a survey of the Northwest Arkansas theater landscape, plus vibraphones inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
But first, nearly 40 families and individuals affected by a major tar sands oil pipeline rupture 2 months ago in the small town of Mayflower, Arkansas, it's about 25 miles northwest of Little Rock, have now filed a lawsuit against ExxonMobil Pipeline. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich spoke with an attorney on the case, and she gives us this status report.
The lawsuit alleging human health effects, environmental damage, and loss of property was filed in the Circuit Court of Faulkner County by the Alabama law firm Harwin, Newell, and Newton on behalf of an estimated 85 residents affected by the Pegasus oil pipeline breach. Attorney Sean Daniels manages Arkansas cases for the law firm and has spent time at the oil spill site.
I mean, all you saw basically was an incredible number of trucks and traffic and vehicles and security people and, you know, obviously the smell is one of the first things you notice when you get in the area.
The pipeline rupture, measuring 22 feet long and 2 inches wide, leaked an estimated 10,000 barrels or 420,000 gallons of dilbit or diluted bitumen. Bitumen's a thick tar-like substance extracted from Canadian tar sands preserves. The Pegasus pipeline, constructed in the late 1940s, originally carried finished crude oil from Texas refineries up to the Midwest. But the line was reversed in 2006 to transport Canadian tar sands oil to Texas for refining into diesel products. According to the U.S. Department of Transportation Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, the suit cites, reversing the flow can stress pipes. The suit also says defendants were aware that tar sands oil tends to be more abrasive and posed certain risks to the aging pipeline infrastructure.
We don't have the metallurgy report back yet, but it's looking more and more like this was a seam failure, which is what you would expect when you have a pipeline that's, you know, under too much pressure.
The complaint alleges that cleanup efforts have failed to capture all the spilled toxic crude, with thousands of gallons still present in the ground, groundwater, and affected structures. An undetermined amount of oil has also drained into a nearby cove adjacent to Lake Conway, a tributary to the Arkansas River.
Part of it, too, was there was some pretty heavy rain that occurred between the spill and within a few days of the spill, which pushed it, you know, of course, further out. And then the residents have told us that one of the first things Exxon did was power wash the oil down into a drainage ditch to collect it then. Well, the first, you know, obviously that gets it out of sight, but it's also moving the oil from one area to another. It spreads it further, and some of the information we're getting now is that some of the oils even got into the conduit system and spread it throughout the subdivision and beyond. But we know from some of the testing that's been done by third parties that not only in the cove, but the cove which is connected to Lake Conway, that the presence of benzene has been detected.
Unlike refined crude oil, which floats on water, heavy oil sinks in water, so it's not easily contained or absorbed. Short-term exposure to crude oil from primary contact and breathing of fumes may cause dizziness, nausea, blurred vision, and headache. Crude oil contains neurotoxins, which affect brain function. The suit also says that benzene, a chemical component of dilute bitumen, has been detected in the lake. Benzene is a known carcinogen.
You know, the people in the affected subdivisions in close proximity to the rupture, you know, they were immediately having nausea, headaches, you know, the typical physical symptoms that you see from exposure to these chemicals. We haven't been getting those reports yet from the folks at the cove and then Lake Conway, and it may just be that by the time it's gotten to that point, it's not as concentrated.
This is not a closed suit, and each claim will be handled individually, not as a class.
Yeah, absolutely. We are. It is not closed. We will continue to add clients as we get them, and we've had a few call recently and wanted to join.
Listed among the defendants are ExxonMobil Pipeline Company, based in Houston, Texas, and ExxonMobil Corporation, which responded via email saying they were aware of the lawsuit but had not yet had a chance to review, so would not comment. Harold Satterfield, who developed and sold the Northwood subdivision in Mayflower, and an associated surveyor, are listed for failing to disclose to residents that the Pegasus oil pipeline was buried just a few feet underground in that district. The plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial to be heard in Faulkner County. In early May, ExxonMobil Corporation provided property owners in the Northwood subdivision a 38-page proposal for either purchasing their homes or providing some compensation as a result of the company's pipeline rupture and spill. No compensation, however, was offered to any residents living downstream. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel, who set up a toll-free hotline for concerned citizens earlier this month, is conducting his own investigation, and a class action lawsuit was filed in federal court in Little Rock in early April, seeking a reported $5 million in damages. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Kyle, we had some big news for the Arkansas Music Pavilion this week.
Commonly known as the AMP, yes.
Right.
The Walton Arts Center Council voted overwhelmingly, only two dissenting votes out of the more than, I think there are 20 people on the council, overwhelmingly to approve a plan that would, if everything comes to fruition, have a permanent site in Rogers. The AMP, during its entire history,
has been in Fayetteville.
At a couple of different sites, first at the mall, and then this year and last, everyone knew it was a temporary home at the Washington County Fairgrounds. There had been desire to find a permanent spot. There was a time when the thought was that might be at the mall, but that didn't work out because of a change of mall management and ownership. So there has been a passionate discussion both before and since, especially online, about this decision for the AMP to move to Rogers.
Well, I know on the Fayetteville Flyer, I mean, there are like hundreds of comments. Are we allowed to say that?
Oh, yes. Yes, and you know, that's a conversation that is going to continue, and it has been an interesting public forum. I went to the council meeting where they decided, and again, this isn't City Council, Walton Arts Center Council meeting, where they decided to approve and go after this plan. And this was the report that aired the morning after that decision. This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Music Pavilion will have a new permanent home in Rogers.
I want to go back and talk a little bit about the AMP and what it means and give you a little bit of idea about the proposal that we have put together.
Yesterday afternoon, the Walton Arts Center Council voted overwhelmingly to approve a plan that developed in just the last few days and weeks. The new home for the planned 6,000-seat facility will be in the Pinnacle Hills area of Rogers on land donated by Janelle Hunt. She's also providing Walton Arts Center, the owner of the AMP, with a $3 million interest-free loan to help with the creation of the project. Peter Lane, the president and CEO of Walton Arts Center, made the presentation in support of the permanent site to the council yesterday and told them the proposal would allow for a larger outdoor venue with easy access to Interstate 540 and a sturdy, enduring shelter.
So having an AMP of this size or a covered shed is really makes us competitive in that talent of acts and artists that we want to see happen.
For almost a decade, the AMP has been in Fayetteville, first at the Northwest Arkansas Mall. Then, after new owners of the mall couldn't come to terms with Walton Arts Center ownership on a new lease, the AMP moved to Washington County's fairgrounds. Peter Lane says for much of the time a permanent site was being sought, the idea was the AMP would remain in its city of origin.
We moved to the fairgrounds, which was temporary, as a temporary venue, and began the search for and we searched high and low. Fayetteville was our first priority. We uncovered every corner that we could, and then, you know, talk with a number of people. And it turns out the most compelling site really is this site because of its combination of meeting all the criteria combined with funding and access and et cetera.
Yesterday's decision did not come unanimously. Steve Clark, a member of the council and also president of the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce, was critical of the process that created the plan. He says communication between interested parties seemed rushed, and he urged the council to wait about 2 weeks until the next regularly scheduled council meeting before signing off on the decision.
There were some questions that got asked, about 47, in fact. Those were asked, the proposal was offered last Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. The questions were asked on Wednesday. The answers came today at 1:36. Why weren't those questions anticipated? They were pretty routine and ordinary, and they seemed to be the things that if you were developing a new $11 million asset, you would ask these questions. And but that's what democracy is all about, and they voted with a majority to do this, and so it's done.
In the end, Steve Clark and one other representative of the 20-member council voted against approval. The $11 million facility has, according to figures provided by Peter Lane, slightly more than 90% of the $11 million price either in hand or planned for. The proposal does count on $500,000 not yet in the bank to come from the sale of luxury boxes on the site and another $500,000 to come from naming rights opportunities. Additionally, Lane says another $500,000 has been pledged by Rogers Mayor Greg Hines. Other gifts for the structure include $1.5 million from the Willard and Pat Walker Charitable Foundation and a $2.5 million gift from an anonymous source described by Lane as a longtime supporter of the center. Lane says with yesterday's approval by the council, the AMP could be open as soon as late June of next year.
That would be our ideal opening. And, you know, it's expensive to run a temporary venue at the fairgrounds. I mean, that's one of the challenges we have, is that we're subject to the wind and the rain and all of that. If an artist that's of a high caliber comes and we have a bad night, and we've had a few of recent, it can really jeopardize that concert's ability to run. So I'm very excited about the fact that we could be open by next season. And I think there's acts that we can attract now because we have a permanent facility, and it's the biggest in Arkansas. So I think it's going to be great for our region in terms of the ability to attract tourism, to be a new destination on the concert tour business. That part gets me very excited.
Lane says the economic potential is considerable for Walton Arts Center. Figures provided by the AMP indicate slightly more than a third of attendees to last year's shows at the temporary site came from outside of Washington and Benton counties. He also told the council yesterday that the majority of attendees to last year's shows of mainstream rock and country concerts represented a new audience for Walton Arts Center, people who did not regularly come to shows at the facility in downtown Fayetteville. Lane says he thinks the new permanent AMP could be a way to draw acts more commonly seen in bigger cities.
We're going to compete for that one big tour that goes out with Dallas and Houston and Kansas City and St. Louis and to some degree Tulsa, and we want to be able to say, hey, let's put our hat in the ring, because we know that our audiences want quality entertainment in Northwest Arkansas. We know they demand this new level of entertainment opportunities, and we know that we want to be part of it at the Walton Arts Center so that we can provide those services to our region.
And again, that report was filed the day after the meeting. So And now there's still work to be done, but Walton Arts Center officials believe that this will happen, and they hope, as I just said in that report, they hope that by late June 2014,
so in a year,
permanent AMP. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. There you go. And now for a look at theater options in the area over the coming weeks. And coming up, something big is rehearsed by the Not So Big in Fort Smith.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
My hand. I need my hand. Mr. Paul Bratter.
Yes.
And is Mrs. Bratter staying with you?
My mother? Mrs. Bratter, yes. Mr. and Mrs. Bratter.
How long will you be staying with us?
This weekend, the Fort Smith Little Theater presents Neil Simon's Barefoot in the Park, one of Neil Simon's early great comedies. It opened on Broadway in 1963 and was made into a movie starring Robert Redford and Jane Fonda in 1967. That's the clip you heard. With a biographical bent, it tells the story of young New York newlyweds. the early days of their marriage, and the challenges of a third-floor apartment. There's a gala performance this Thursday, May 30th, with regular performances May 31st, June 1st, June 5th through 8th, and a matinee performance June 2nd. Again, that's at the Fort Smith Little Theater. Next weekend, the Rogers Little Theater presents Lombardi, bringing to theatrical life the Hall of Fame football coach Vince Lombardi, questionably one of the most inspirational and quotable personalities of all time.
One game can make a season, and one player, any player, may make or break a play, a game, a season. There are approximately 150 plays in a football game, and there are only three or four plays in any game which make the difference between winning and losing. No one knows when the big play is coming up.
Lombardi Therefore, is a play by Eric Simonson, based on the book When Pride words, Still Mattered, A Life of Vince Lombardi by Pulitzer Prize-winning author David Marinus. Performances are June 7th through the 9th, 13th through the 15th. A Father's Day tailgate brunch will be held June 16th. And on June 29th at the Walton Arts Center, Spank, a 50 Shades parody.
5, 6, 7, and...
Why can't I just do things on my own?
If you were a 90s child, or you had a 90s child, or perhaps you just like Tom Hanks, then you probably remember the film Big. Big, released in 1988, tells the story of Josh Baskin, a 13-year-old who wishes to be grown. He gets his wish. Josh finds himself in a grown man's body, but he's still 13 on the inside. The film was turned into a Broadway musical in 1996. It is Big, the musical, that the Young Actors Guild will be performing for their summer musical, June 13th through the 16th. 19-year-old Hunter Brown plays grown Josh. I spoke with Hunter at a Young Actors Guild, or YAG, rehearsal last week. A kid at heart, he says playing 12 at 19 is still difficult.
There are definitely some things that had to break down some barriers. It's definitely harder to just watching the kids that are in the show, because we have young ones in the show. That's the way I kind of tried to base the character off of. And also just watching Tom Hanks do it and seeing how he translated it. I didn't want to just do it the way he did it, but give my own spin on it too, but it was definitely good to as a reference.
At 19, this is Hunter's final show with YAG. The youngest here is 10. Hunter says that the music gives this version of the story a much different feel from the movie.
And I know that there was the original Broadway production was more classical musical theater, and I tried to give it a more poppy feel, just because it's a new group of people seeing it now compared to in the 90s when it premiered on Broadway. So that's what I'm doing.
Speaking of that music, for the first time in the Guild's history, YAG has hired a music director from elsewhere. Paul Helm comes to Fort Smith all the way from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, from Milwaukee Repertoire Theater. Helm says the score is very Broadway, but...
You know, it takes place in the 90s, so it still has that 90s kind of genre feel to it. So there's some kind of rap at moments here and there, but I mean, if you hear the score, it would take you back to the 90s for sure. But a lot of fun. There's everything from calypso kind of rumba type songs to rock to ballads to waltzes. I mean, so many different music styles are in this show, but it's a funny, upbeat, happy show, and I mean. People should definitely come out and see it. It makes you smile, makes you feel good, you know, and that's what it should be.
That feel-good story is great for the 50 or so kids involved. A message to not grow up too fast. Missy Gibson, YAG's executive director, says the show's message is also good for adults.
Because it's the idea that, you know, we want to rush things sometimes because we feel impatient for whatever reason. You know, kids want to grow up because they want to be taken seriously, you know, and they want to be able to make choices on their own and be independent. And then, you know, sometimes as adults, you know, it would be nice if we could probably step back a little bit and find that that kind of carefree spirit we had as kids, that invincibility. And this musical really illustrates that, I think.
The show's director, Missy, makes sure the kids work hard to put on a professional performance. I caught her giving the kids a bit of a lesson.
You have a choice. Actually, adults, this is a good lesson for y'all, too. You have a choice. You have a choice when you're in a show, right? You can choose to work really hard at it at home, or you can choose to think, just like when you're in school, that you can just get it by osmosis and it'll naturally come to you when we open the show. That won't happen, right? Yes. So what I'm saying, so what I'm saying is a couple of you have really gotten it because you've been watching your videos, yeah? So, but you all have to be there, okay? Do it again, ready? Sadie was nailing it, and actually even my boys are nailing it too. Five.
She
six,
says
Yak seven,
expects
eight,
a lot of their kids.
One, two,
they don't pay to be in these shows. They have to audition and work hard. Missy says in her 7 years as director, she hasn't been let down once. Audience can expect a professional caliber show, complete with the 30-foot piano we all remember from the film so well. This one was part of the original Big the Musical touring show. Missy tracked it down all the way in New York City. As for Zoltar, the genie machine that grants Josh's wish, he'll be there too, but played by one of the actors. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
We just heard about several options in Northwest Arkansas and the River Valley for live theater entertainment this month. Recently, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda surveyed the community theater landscape to see how it's evolved, and she has this report.
Like many things in Northwest Arkansas, theater in the region has changed dramatically during the last 20 years. There is more of it, and the shows that local companies produce range from classic musicals to fresh off Broadway productions. What hasn't changed is the need for weeks of rehearsal prior to opening night. Recently, a group of actors gathered inside Northwest Arkansas Community College's White Auditorium for a night of rehearsal.
I must say, I don't blame Phelps Potter for playing around.
Oh, does her husband?
Oh, Phelps has made passes at all us girls. I do think it's bad taste for a man to try and make his wife's friends, especially when he's bald and fat. I told him once, Phelps Potter, I said, the next time you grab at me, I'll go straight to Edith.
And did you?
Certainly not.
A little over a week ago, the curtain fell for the final time for the Village Players. After 31 seasons, the Benton County-based community theater group closed its doors. Kathy Forbes directed The Women, the organization's final production.
There's so many people that have got so many ideas, and they keep trying to shove them all into this kind of old format that they've followed for many years. This is going to give a lot of people, there's a lot of creative people that have been doing theater with Village Players for many years, and I'm excited to see what they're going to do now. There's little seedlings of things that are going to happen from this. Village Players will never be gone completely because the people will just, they'll create new things, and there's such a sense of community that really was based in Bella Vista, and I have a feeling we'll see something that'll spring up there that'll kind of go back to their roots and the way they used to do things, and you know, really tried to jump in with the big boys down here but without your own space down in Bentonville. So, and you know, I'm really hoping that we get to see a community theater in Bentonville at some point. Nothing against RLT, I love them, but it would be nice to see a little black box theater somewhere, and I hear rumblings and of maybe something happening that way, and really hoping it does.
Jan Reed Miller, former board president and a cast member of The Women, says not having a permanent home for the group made it difficult for them to get their name out in the community. The actress says she believes it wasn't one thing, but rather a combination of things that led to the group disbanding. She says for whatever reason, it dwindled down to there just wasn't enough support for them to keep going.
It seems like when we started, it was the Bella Vista Village Players, and so we were at Reardon Hall, and it was kind of a community-based. But then it got to the point where we couldn't afford Reardon Hall anymore, so we found another home here, which required a retirement community in Bella Vista to come here. And then that retirement community has kind of dwindled, and we've done a lot of work on trying to incorporate Bentonville and get Bentonville involved. But you know, the audiences just kept dwindling. People kept dwindling who would try out. There were a lot of new things, Theater Square, the Walden Arts Center, Rogers Little Theater, you know, Springdale. So it just seemed like we tried our best to figure out a way, tried everything we knew how to get more interest, and it just didn't happen.
Another long-standing theater staple in Benton County is Rogers Little Theater. Kay Cotton co-founded the nonprofit organization 27 years ago.
At that time, really, if you wanted to participate in theater, whether it was painting a set or acting or directing, you had to either drive to the ACO in Springdale or go to Joplin or Tulsa. And, of course, there was theater at the university, too, but it was mostly university students. So there just wasn't really much opportunity. And the audiences, of course, didn't have many options. And now, for goodness sakes, there's theater all over the place.
The creation of professional entities like Theater Squared and Ceramic Cow Productions have helped create more theater opportunities in the region. In addition to the growth of theater, the subject matter on stage has changed as well. Cotton says Rogers Little Theater is a lot better off technically than it used to be. She recalls a time when the group painted tin coffee cans black, inserted light bulbs into them, and then strung them up between trees for lighting during an early production. Cotton says some other changes at RLT include making an effort to really involve kids, as well as producing plays they wouldn't have had the nerve to do 20 years ago. She says in recent years, some of RLT's productions have been quite mature in theme.
Back then, we tried to select shows that we knew would be big crowd pleasers because we needed to draw audiences. And so we selected shows like Neil Simon plays and musicals, which are always popular, comedies, or if we did a drama, it would be something like 12 Angry Men or The Glass Menagerie, something that had name recognition, and we knew we could get folks to come. Now, we're beginning to do shows that nobody's ever heard of. I doubt that many people in the area who aren't real theater fans would know Love, Loss, and What I Wore. They'd say, huh? What's that? It's a wonderful play. And so, you know, we're just being more ambitious in the programming. Plus, we do a lot more shows now than we did. We started out doing 5.
Art Center of the Ozarks and Sager Creek Art Center are two organizations that are adapting to the changing theater landscape. The ACO in Springdale has been working on a $1 million revitalization project to improve the organization's home by fixing heating and cooling units and refurbishing the exterior facade and parking. Jan Lauderdale, board president at Sager Creek Art Center, says they've been trying to re-energize the board of the Siloam Springs-based art center. Lauderdale says they've infused the board with new people and they're focused on rebuilding, so the community will be as excited about what they're doing as they are.
In any organization that's run on a volunteer basis, a lot of times it comes down to there's a small group of people that are doing everything. And I'm living in fear that those people that have been doing everything are going to be burned out and not want to do it anymore, and then it will die. And so because of that, we realized we've got to infuse it with new life. We've got to bring more people in here that are willing to help keep it alive. And so that's really what caused us to sit back and say, okay, it's time. We've got to figure out how we're going to make this happen if it's going to stay alive, because otherwise it's not. And, you know, the Village Players are very good friends of ours, and we've actually collaborated with them before on productions. And it just broke my heart when they had to close.
As community theater groups often do, Sager Creek struggles with being an organization run solely by volunteers. Stephen Spinotto, who has been involved with the group since he was a child, is now a board member, and his focus has been helping the organization with publicity.
We actually have no one to run the Arts Center, so really the board members have to act as, you know, almost day-to-day, which we can't really do, trying to manage as much as we can. So then what you are left with is, you know, whenever you find someone who's willing to direct a show, that director becomes everything. That director becomes publicist. That director becomes, you know, not just artistic director, but, I mean, everything that they're having to put together. And that's really putting a strain on, well, publicity. Kind of took the shot, which is unfortunate because you know, how are you going to get people to come see your show if they don't hear about it?
Spinotto says now that they've built the board back up, they're looking at how to build back a foundation of membership and donors and corporate sponsorships. These things are necessary because most theater companies can't survive on ticket sales alone. Jan Lauderdale, board president at Sager Creek Art Center, says the group's number one priority is to be able to hire someone again because that person could help apply for grants. When asked what theater in Northwest Arkansas will look like in the next 20 years, Kay Cotton, co-founder of Rogers Little Theater, agrees that having a paid employee is something that will need to happen.
I think we are fast approaching the time when we're going to, and I can only speak for Rogers Little Theater, but we're going to have to hire some full-time staff people. We need a technical director. We need somebody to build and paint the scenes. We may even wind up with an artistic director who actually will direct most of the shows, like Harry Blundell at ACO directs most of the shows, and then every now and then he'll pull in somebody to, you know, who's a volunteer, you know, not a professional, but he will have them direct a show. But for the most part, the artistic director has huge role in selecting the shows and then in directing them. And I think we're going to get to that point. I think we'll have to.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Child musical prodigy turned film composer extraordinaire. That's Austrian composer Erich Wolfgang Korngold. He wrote only one symphony, and that was in 1952, his symphony in F sharp. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony from 7 to 9 p.m. Sunday nights right here on KUAF Public Radio. Join me for Korngold's Symphony in F-sharp performed by the London Symphony Orchestra led by Andre Previn. That's coming up Sunday night from 7 to 9 p.m. on KUAF Public Radio.
Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, June 2. 2013. I'm Kyle Callum.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brand, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Shocked once again that another month has rolled by.
First Sunday of June.
If Memorial Day doesn't make you think of summer, when you start something with the word June, we're in it.
We cannot ever allow Memorial Day to not be the last weekend in May, though, because it just confuses people.
Yeah.
Something fierce.
Yes.
Where are we? How did we get here? Mm-hmm. Well, we flew in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's an exhibit opening at the Fayetteville Underground. It's their first national juried exhibition. Starts Thursday, and it's called Women Take Flight.
Yeah.
It was created to coincide with the Air Race Classic, which is an all-female air race that starts in Washington State and ends in Fayetteville on June 21st.
Going to end at Drake Field.
Exactly. And they decided, well, let's invite people to do a themed exhibition about Women Take Flight and leave the interpretation up to the artists. They got 60 submissions from all over the nation, culled it down to 26, and it is on display through June 29th with a reception at 5 Thursday.
So they just sort of said, Women Take Flight, and just said go to
right.
these artists.
Exactly. Okay. And so it might not have anything to do with an airplane.
Right.
Yeah.
It might have to do with a dancer leaping, I believe, is one of the ones I saw.
Or maybe me with wings.
Exactly.
Okay.
Do you have wings?
Maybe.
We should talk about this. I've been trying to get a set for years. Among the Northwest Arkansas artists are Erica Nelson, Sarah McCormick, Cedar Kindy. It'll be a lot of fun. Also today, the Mountain Street Stage Series starts at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Adams Collins, who we're going to hear from the Furman Garner Performance Studio in a few minutes.
In just a minute.
Yeah.
2 o'clock, it's free. This is a library that does everything.
They've got a brand new sound system, too.
Oh, cool.
That's going to debut today.
So much fun.
They're excited and a little bit anxious, I think, you know, whenever something new.
If you're interested in seasonal wildflowers, Bill and Emily Robertson did a spring event at Hobbs State Park. Now, today, they're doing summer at 2 o'clock, talking about what you might find in Northwest Arkansas if you're out strolling around, besides rattle-headed copper moccasins.
Is that a new breed?
That's the general all-purpose. Gosh, okay. I'm afraid of snakes. Right. You're free to borrow that, by the way. And the Crawford County Chronicles this afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Dren and Scott Historic Site in Van Buren. Warren Blaylock talking about Bonnie and Clyde.
We'll hear from him tomorrow.
We will, yeah.
Excellent.
I spoke with him.
Excellent. It sounds like we have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
So go have fun. And if you're still at Wakarusa or you're coming back, aloe.
Can I just say something about the Women Take Flight?
Please.
and the contest that's ending at Drake Field, origins go back to the 20s when there was something that was colloquially called the Powderpuff Derby.
Oh, he's going to talk about his hero.
I'm
going to
keep it brief. Will Rogers was a big proponent of this, and it was women. He was trying to promote women and aviation, and they flew all over, and he kept a daily journal that was read by millions in newspapers across the country. Amelia Earhart, everyone knew her. She was kind of considered to be the favorite.
Beaten by?
Louise Thaden.
Our own.
If you go to the Bentonville Airport, it's called the Louise Thaden Airport. That's the shortest amount of time I've ever used to talk about Louise Thaden.
And I believe that you can find out more about her at both the Rogers and the Springdale Museums.
And at Oklahoma City's airport as well. They have a display about her. Okay.
Lots of things to learn.
Yes.
Thank you, Kyle. And thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Next month, chefs in downtown Bentonville are taking on some culinary challenges. They'll be pairing up their dishes with specific wines, beers, cheese, even art. There are several specific food events scheduled inside the city's Art and Culinary Festival that runs the entire length of June. Two participating chefs recently came to our studio to discuss the science, art, and experimentation included in preparing a meal based on pairings. Matthew McClure, the executive chef at The Hive inside the 21C Hotel, is working on a meal combining locally brewed beers with his food. He'll be working with Andrew Coates, the brewmaster at the Fayetteville-based West Mountain Brewing Company.
It's very exciting to sort of, you know, wrap this Arkansas cuisine up in one, you know, to try to start it in, you know, in one dinner, you know, with somebody that's actually, you know, designing and crafting beer in the area, and then, you know, using farmers' locally grown food, and then just putting all that, you know, brushing it up, putting on a plate, and having a really nice time of it.
Matthew says the process of taking full advantage of flavors from two very different types of food or drink begins for the chef where it begins for the customer, by tasting.
You sort of kind of break down a couple of flavor profiles that are in the beer itself, you know, and that could be, you know, caramel from the malted barley, or it, you know, it could be you know, certain aromatics that come out of the hops, and there's a lot of layers that are built into, you know, when the hops are added to the, you know, the process of making the beer, so that gives it different flavors. Taking those flavors, you know, and the intensity of them, and sort of pairing different, you know, lettuces, or, you know, if it's a rich beer, maybe, you know, you want a rich food with it. Or if it's a light, crisp beer, you want something light with it. And sort of, you know, kind of starting there.
For Case DeGuerro, the chef at 11, the restaurant inside Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, pairings this month are inspired by something two-dimensional, works that are hanging at the museum. In June, he's putting together a dinner inspired by art included in the museum's exhibit titled Angels and Tomboys. He says the task of coherently mixing art and food is actually the coolest part of his job.
Angels and Tomboys, which is a really interesting study on young women sort of in art in the late 19th century into the 20th century. And so we have been having a great time, my team, my culinary team and I, developing ideas of what we're going to do. And we were, you know, brainstorming just yesterday, and we started thinking about this idea of angels and tomboys. And immediately we started talking about dessert. Well, what does that mean? Well, angels and tomboys, the dessert has to be sweet and salty.
Concepts are one thing, meals another. While Case and Matthew both relish the challenge of pairings, they say knowing what doesn't work is just as important as knowing what does.
Not everything, you know, not everything is magical at the first, you know, the first swing. Sometimes you gotta scrap it and start all over. That's absolutely true, and it can be frustrating, especially when you have 5 courses or 10 courses. You know, that even adds more pressure. But you know, I mean, I think that's sort of part of the creative process. And overall, it's a lot of fun. You know, if it's not working, it's not working, and you just gotta be honest with yourself and say, you know, we're gonna try something totally different. You know.
And equally as interesting is when you come across something that is completely unexpected. When, you know, you're experimenting, and it could be with wine, it could be with whatever, and you're kind of going in one direction, and suddenly something else pops up that you were like, I had no idea that this was going to be so good together. to me, that happens a lot, you know, where I'm sort of surprised and it's unexpected, which is exciting.
Both chefs say having to create specific meals based on one-time inspirations can lead to inspirations they'll use later. The forced experimentation required to create a one-time menu keeps their minds fresh, they say. Kay says working at 11 means never really having to wait long for inspiration. Lately, on his nightly drive home from work, he's been looking at the temporary outdoor installation called Buckyball. It's a large ball covered with changing lights.
I've stopped to look at Buckyball like 3 times in the last week just because I'm on my way out at night and I'll see it through the trees and it's glowing and sort of it's this really cool orb. And last night I had to stop and I pulled over and I got on the bench and I was looking up at it and I was thinking, what can we create here? There has to be some kind of, I'm thinking gelato or ice cream or something like that. So constantly thinking about inspiration that's coming from the works.
Case and Matthew seem cordial, even cooperative, discussing ideas. They say other chefs in the area also enjoy seeing what each other can create. Kay says what's happening in downtown Bentonville with food can have an exponential effect.
I keep hearing more, and we keep meeting more people and things that are happening. It's a real synergy, and it's a really interesting, cool time to be a part of that community. And I love it. I mean, I'm inspired every day that I drive into town.
Special culinary events in Bentonville in June include the beer pairing at The Hive, that's on June 11th, the art-inspired meal prepared by Case at Crystal Bridges on June 12th, as well as a wine and cheese dinner with a spotlight on cheeses made in Arkansas at Tusk and Trotter on June 6th. You can find an entire list at the website downtownbentonville.org.
The Mountain Street Stage Series begins this afternoon at the Fayetteville Public Library, and on Ozarks at Large, we will be bringing you a preview of each and every one of the performers.
That's right. We're inviting everyone who's on that series agenda to come into the Furman Garden Performance Studio. We hear from them as they play live in on Friday, and then if we have an extra song, we'll put it here on Sunday as well. One more extra nudge to let you know that there's live music at the library.
Right, and so this afternoon, the Adams Collins Jazz Trio will be playing there.
Yes, and so in May, Adams and Garrett, the bassist, and Johnny, the drummer, all came in to the Furman Garden Performance Studio to talk and play for Antoinette Grajeda. And we heard one of those songs on Friday's show, the daily edition of our show on Friday. But they had another performance. So just to help you get ready for this, I think, third annual series at the library, here's another performance.
It's called Sip, Drink, and Toke. Sip, Drink, Toke, played by the Adams Collins Jazz Trio. You can hear them this afternoon at 2 at the Fayetteville Public Library as part of the Mountain Street Stage Series. And it's free.
Absolutely free. All of them will be. Next week, a week from this afternoon, it's Leah and the Mojo Doctors. Thursday night, before the big storms hit, most of the Mojo Doctors, they didn't bring in their drummer. That set would have been too big for the room. But most of the Mojo Doctors and Leah came in. I talked to them. It was a great conversation. They played a couple songs, and we'll hear that Friday and Sunday of next week on Ozarks at Large.
Sounds good. All right. Well, this afternoon, you are heading out of town.
Very soon after my voice is here, yes. Going to be away from the building for the next 2 weeks. I can't remember the last time I had a two-week vacation where I did not come in. And part of that time, I'm going to be out of the country. I'm very excited. I'm going to Iceland.
Right. And that's something that you have wanted to do for, I mean, what, 15 years?
I'd say
longer?
Even more than 20.
Okay.
I first became obsessed with Iceland. The obsession began, I should say. There was a band when I was in college called the Sugar Cubes. Lead singer was Björk before she went solo.
Okay.
I kind of got into that band. And I thought, what is this Iceland place? I started reading, and it's just been, I have bored friends and colleagues and coworkers ad nauseum for years about my fascination with Iceland. So now I'm finally going to see
something it. Something I've definitely heard about. May I say that it was a gift from your wife for your recent 50th birthday?
It was. So a once-in-a-lifetime sort of trip.
Yeah, yes. A good deal.
Well, that inspired this week's montage. It's All Things Ice.
Collaborate and listen. Ice is back with my brand new invention. Something. Get your ice cream, Frutzy Frutzy ice cream. ZVBXRPL. Get your
I had that same horse when I had my eyes examined.
Get your
Hey, ice cream. What about this optical illusion you just slipped me? I don't understand it.
That's not the real name of the horse. That's the name of the horse in code. Look in your code book.
About your mission. Well, I wouldn't insult you by swearing you to secrecy or anything of that sort. I think the most expedient thing, since you have your orders, is to obey them.
Short of endangering my ship or my crew?
Naturally. May I ask, Captain, when we expect to reach the ice barrier?
Yes, you may ask.
One thing I guess is pretty obvious by now, ladies and gentlemen, about every type of raiment that's seen here at Lambeau Field today, and by any yardstick, it's just plain cold. It is indeed cold in Green Bay.
'Cause I'm your ice cream man, and I'm a one-man band, and I'm your ice cream man, baby, I'll be good to you.
And the whole world's heading south.
Get off me!
Except four misfits going the other way.
I'm not going.
Who are about to discover something that brings them together.
We should return him.
If you're looking for the humans, you're never going to reach them before the pass closes up with snow.
Now they're looking out for the kid.
From now on, refer to me as Lord of the Flame.
Hey, Lord of the Flame.
Your tail's on fire.
And everyone else, better look out for them.
Still dangerous. You can be my wingman anytime.
And as always, you can find the items that were, there were 10 again this week, that are in our montage by going to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com, and just look for the link to this day's show.
K KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com on the web, or call 444-7711 for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Brashears.
Okay. I hear Brashears all the time, but I'm not sure where it is.
Well, Thursday, when you and I did the Daily Show, you said Crosses.
Crosses.
Friday, quite coincidentally, Antoinette picked Patrick.
Okay.
And then I said, well, I always think of three communities together, and that's Patrick, Brashears,
and Crosses.
So I thought I would complete at least in my mind, triumvirate of towns along that corridor.
I feel like I should have known that then. But how often do I really drive down
I don't know.
Highway 16?
I don't know.
Not very often.
It's a pretty drive.
Yes.
Highway 16 is great, actually. You will be back tomorrow at noon.
I will be back tomorrow.
By yourself with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.
Antoinette and I will be together on Tuesday and Wednesday and kind of for the next couple of weeks.
That's right.
Because tomorrow you're going to be
on
a plane.
Yeah.
Probably.
Hopefully, yeah. Yes. And I am looking forward to the time away. And again, I mentioned this on Friday's show with Antoinette, but thanks to you and Antoinette and Tim and Jackie and Katie and Roby and Michael Taylor, everyone who's made it possible, I can leave for 2 weeks. I think it's a good thing for a human being to be able to kind of leave.
Oh,
for
definitely.
A little bit. So I'll be back on the 17th. Thank you very much for that. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, now there are some things I've produced ahead of time, and tomorrow on your show is my conversation with Leo Mazow, who is an associate professor of American art history at the University of Arkansas. He won the Eldridge Prize from the Smithsonian Art Museum of American Art.
You just have to say Smithsonian, and that's pretty prestigious.
Very prestigious. It's for his book about Thomas Hart Benton and the American Sound. Fascinating book, fascinating guy, and that will be part of what you have on Monday.
It will. In addition to this afternoon, there's a talk at the Drennan Scott House.
Yes.
About Bonnie and Clyde, and I spoke with that speaker, and so I have that story tomorrow.
Not just about Bonnie and Clyde, but memories
yes.
of when Bonnie and Clyde were in Western
right.
Arkansas.
Because he's 92,
yeah,
so he was 12.
Has a vivid memory of, and it was a big deal. There was a shooting, and unfortunately a deputy officer was killed by one of the gang members, so... Sounds like a very interesting show tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'll try to tune in from Reykjavik.
Okay.
All right.
Until then, have a good Sunday, and thanks for listening.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Christina Thomas.